Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for January 2015. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Bresnan Parr LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. Counterfeit goods are a worldwide problem. Trademark and copyright owners recently obtained a new weapon to keep counterfeit goods out of Canada by stopping them at the border. As of the beginning of January 2015, what was Bill C-8 and what is now the Combating Counterfeit Products Act allows trademark and copyright owners to make requests for assistance of the Canadian Border Services Agency to stop counterfeiters from bringing their goods into Canada. Our guests today are Cynthia Rowden and Scott McKendrick. Both Cynthia and Scott are partners in the Toronto office of Bresnan and Parr. Cynthia is the head of the Trademarks Practice Group. Much of her practice relates to managing the international trademark portfolios of large Canadian companies and the Canadian portfolios of some of the biggest trademark owners in the world. In 2014, Cynthia was named as Who's Who Legal's Trademark Lawyer of the Year globally. Scott McKendrick is one of the very few Canadian lawyers highly ranked for both trademark prosecution as well as enforcement and litigation. In 2014, Scott was named by Benchmark Canada as a litigation star in intellectual property. I spoke with Cynthia and Scott in our Toronto office. Cynthia, where did Bill C-8 come from? What concerns was Bill C-8 addressing?
Bill C-8, or the Combating Counterfeit Products Act, was introduced in 2013 to address long-standing international complaints that Canada did not have effective border surveillance to prevent the importation or exportation of counterfeit merchandise. The Copyright Act and the Trademarks Act both had limiter border provision assistance provisions, neither of which were very successful. In addition, the Criminal Code included provisions against trademark forgery, but since they may not apply to retailers or other distributors, they were of little assistance to brand owners. Trademark owners were forced to combat counterfeit on a piecemeal basis after the merchandise has already been released into the market, whereas stopping the goods at their source would be the most effective way of dealing with this. Canada had actually been placed on a U.S. watch list of countries with inappropriate legal systems. The real impetus, the thing that really got this off the ground, was the fact that international trade negotiations, including negotiations with the European Community and with South Korea, resulted in the specific provisions being put into Bill C-8 and the ultimate implementation of these provisions.
Now, I understand there were some concerns expressed before the bill was passed. What were those concerns?
Stakeholders raised four main issues. The first, which was important for the United States government, was that goods in transit from another source, ultimately destined for outside Canada, would not be covered even if they did come through Canadian borders. Secondly, the cost of detention of goods has been a long-standing irritant, particularly because the way the Act is drafted is to require that goods seized be detained in bonded warehouses. In addition, there is a lack of a summary legal dispute system. For goods to remain in detention, brand owners actually have to start litigation. And the last thing was that there are no statutory damages for trademark infringement, whereas the Copyright Act, for example, includes statutory damages. Instead, for trademarks, owners must prove their damages. All of these issues were raised in consultation, and none of them were actually resolved before the legislation was passed.
What was the timing of the passage of the bill, and when do various parts of it take effect?
Bill C-8 has two parts to it. The first addresses counterfeit products and the remedies for dealing with that for brand owners. The other deals with changes to the Trademarks Act, which were included in Bill C-8 to provide an opportunity for Parliament to actually address some longstanding issues regarding updating the Trademarks Act. The only part that has been declared in effect so far are those dealing with expanded infringement provisions, criminal sanctions, and the request for border assistance in terms of dealing with counterfeit products. The trademark infringement and criminal provisions came into effect on December 9th, and the request for assistance from customs came into effect on January 1st. The rest of the provisions in the Act are also copied in Bill C-31, another piece of legislation which makes very major amendments to the Trademarks Act, and that those amendments have been passed but not yet implemented.
Scott, what sort of counterfeiting does the bill address?
The prohibition provisions of the Copyright Act and the Trademarks Act, as amended by Bill C-8, speak to both importation and exportation. For copyright, what's captured is works which infringe copyright. Registration's not required to fall within this regime, but is recommended, and Cynthia's going to touch on some of the language in the form in a few moments. What's also captured on the trademark side is registered trademarks. The key here is that the marks need to be registered to engage the regime. The test for the prohibition is not the same test as we have for trademark infringement. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. It's a stricter test. Goods must bear identical trademarks or trademarks which cannot be distinguished in its essential aspects from the registered trademark. We're no doubt going to see litigation on the scope of this distinguished in its essential aspects from test.
Scott, are certain things excluded?
In addition to goods in transit, Cynthia touched on that a little bit earlier, other goods which are excluded are gray goods, that is, trademarks which have been applied with the consent to those goods. We're going to see litigation on the scope of this section as well. Goods where the sale, distribution, or association is not contrary to the Act. This is likely going to be goods where the trademark use is not considered to be use, as that word is defined within the Act. And as well, goods intended only for personal use.
What's the procedure involved in having goods seized?
First, a request for assistance must be filed with the Canada Border Services Agency. The request for assistance, or RFA, must be accepted by the minister, and this will be done through the CBSA. At this stage, it appears that acceptance will likely take a month or so, but I can advise that on the first RFA that has been filed, acceptance occurred within one day. A customs official may then detain goods for 5 days for perishable goods and 10 working days for non-perishable goods. Notably, the Act provides that detention costs are to be borne by the copyright and or the trademark owner, although the IP holder might be able to later recoup those costs from the goods owner and the importer or exporter. There's some uncertainty at this time as to when the CBSA will be looking for payment of detention costs from the IP holder. We understand at this time, however, that costs will not be sought in the initial 10-day period. Lastly, a court action must be commenced, and notice of the commencement of the action must be provided to the minister within the detention period. Again, notably, the copyright and or trademark holder may be liable for damages for losses, costs, or prejudice suffered by the owner, importer, exporter, or consignee if the action is later discontinued or ultimately dismissed.
Cynthia, the request for assistance form is brand new. What issues does it raise?
First of all, there's issues raised by the information that's required to be included in the form itself. The form requires information on the name and address of the rights holder, a specific indication of the rights relied upon, whether or not they're registered trademarks or copyright, and if they're registered trademarks, the relevant registration number, with respect to either copyright or registered trademarks, a list of the goods that would be covered, and then information with respect to lists of approved importers and those importers who are known not to have been approved. One of the things that the form mentions is that if there is a copyright, it could be advantageous for copyright owners to register their copyright, despite the fact that the Act itself does not require a registered copyright. In addition, there is a warning in the terms and conditions of the form with respect to the potential liability of the owner for detention costs. And this has actually raised a number of questions, which are still now being answered by the Canada Border Services Agency, or the CBSA, with respect to what liability trademark owners or copyright owners will have for detention costs. In, another thing that is included on the form is a box that says whether or not a bond is included, and if so, how much. The Act provides for the IP rights owner to provide security at the request of the minister, but at this point there doesn't seem to be any requirement for a bond to be posted along with the request for assistance form.
Are there any other issues that the form raises?
One of the interesting tactical issues is that the form permits IP rights owners to include multiple IP rights in a request, so that they could include multiple trademarks and multiple copyrights. Tactically, we're not sure if that's going to be a good idea or not until we actually see how effective the seizure provisions are by the Canada Border Services Agency. For example, if putting multiple trademarks into a request dilutes the impact of any particular trademark, it may be preferable to file single requests at this time. And certainly because there doesn't appear to be a cost associated with filing the request for assistance at that time, at this time, the a single form per IP right or related IP rights may be the best way to proceed. In addition, the IP rights holder is supposed to file information with respect to the identification of permissible goods. So, for example, descriptions of trademarks, samples of drawings of any copyrighted work, and a description of the type of goods that would be sold. It's not clear that the Canada Border Services Agency wants or would prefer not to have actual samples of goods. At this point, we think that the best thing to be doing is to have very good photos of the rights that you're relying upon, examples of trademarks or examples of artwork associated with copyright.
This bill expands the definition of trademark infringement. What's new?
In short, the definition now expressly captures the activities of sale, distribution, or advertisement, and as well, importing or exporting. In a bit more detail, the definition includes the sale, offering for sale, or distribution, and the manufacturing, causing to be manufactured, possessing, importing, exporting, or attempting to export, of goods or services that are confusing with a trademark or trade name, and of any label or package bearing a trademark or trade name that the person knows or ought to know is not associated with the goods or services of the registered trademark owner.
I understand there are also some new criminal sanctions.
An owner, importer, or exporter may now be subject to fines up to $25,000 or imprisonment up to 6 months if convicted on a summary offense, or up to fines of $1 million and 5 years imprisonment on indictment. Notably, judges are now empowered to order the destruction or disposal of infringing goods under this new criminal sanction regime.
Why did they include criminal sanctions?
I think the criminal sanctions round out the package of counterfeit remedies, and they clearly allow the police to take action in situations where it may not have been clear in the past. As I mentioned before, the criminal code forgery provisions were never clearly applied to retailers who weren't actually engaged in making a forgery, whereas the new provisions will permit criminal sanctions to apply to retailers and distributors as well as persons making the goods. One of the real issues with respect to both the border surveillance and detention provisions as well as the criminal provisions is, will the police, or more likely the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, with respect to goods in the marketplace, actually have the time and resources to increase the number of criminal prosecutions for counterfeit? Right now, the resources of the RCMP have been stretched to the limit, and they have tended to restrict their activities regarding counterfeits to goods that are clearly contrary to health and safety concerns, or may involve terrorist activities. And it's not certain whether that interest will expand with the new provisions to include goods that might not have health or safety issues.
So what do companies that want to engage the Combating Counterfeit Products Act, what should they do now?
I guess there's two parts to this. The first is to make sure that they have the ammunition so that the Canada Border Services Agency will actually get involved in the detention of goods. So in order to be able to do that, they need to review their portfolios of trademark registrations and make sure that both the trademarks that are most subject to be counterfeit, as well as the goods that counterfeit merchandise appear on, are covered by registrations. And if not, ask themselves whether they should be updating their trademark portfolios or whether or not there's opportunities to secure copyright rights with respect to those counterfeited items. The other part, obviously, is to get their applications before the Canada Border Services Agency by filling out the request for assistance forms. And as mentioned, at this point, there is no fee for this, so now would be the time to do this, because ultimately we suspect that the resources of CBSA will be reassigned once this procedure starts to get into effect, and there could very well be a reconsideration of whether or not there will be fee or security requirements. The other part of this is setting up teams at the company to permit the company to respond, and I'll let Scott talk about that.
What IP rights holders really need to do is to have their decision-making capacity able to engage quickly once they've received notice that the CBSA has detained goods in that 5-day for perishable goods or 10 working day for non-perishable goods time frame. As Cynthia mentioned a moment ago, they need to establish internal teams to be able to assess the goods which have been detained. As creating those internal teams, they should have an initial internal team and a backup in case the first team is not available. In addition to this, they should also consider whether they can come up with ways to be able to easily identify counterfeits. That may be marking that it actually adopts onto the products themselves that might assist, or it might be internal testing procedures that are going to allow them to be able to make those assessments on a quick basis. More importantly, I think what parties need to do is to consider whether there's going to be a threshold before which they may not engage the regime. In other words, what I'm getting to here is there going to be a amount of goods detained that will cause an IP rights holder to say, no, we're not going to engage the regime, we're not going to request an extended detention, we're not going to commence a proceeding. One factor, though, that should go into this is where there may be a safety issue vis-a-vis the goods that have been detained. That might be something which effectively trumps the threshold.
That brings us to some tactical issues. First of all, with respect to the safety issue, we've debated internally as to the potential liability of an IP rights holder should they be informed of potential counterfeit goods that they then determine to be actually are counterfeit goods, and then they elect not to commence litigation and permit those goods to enter the marketplace. If there is a subsequent health and safety concern that arises, what would be their liability? And at this point, there's obviously no case law on this, but it's an interesting issue to pursue. There are also some other issues that will get resolved as there becomes more experience with the system. But just by way of example, the bill, as passed, requires that all seized merchandise be detained in a bonded warehouse. And bonded warehousing costs are very high. Parties may request the right of the minister to permit storage in another location. And we suspect that for goods that are detained, where litigation will be sought, parties will immediately request the opportunity to select an alternate storage opportunity that costs less than the bonded warehouse. The other point is that a 10-day period is given to IP rights owners to determine whether the goods are counterfeit and decide whether or not to proceed with litigation. If in that 10-day period they can contact the importer, distributor, or the source and reach an agreement with respect to the destruction of goods, obviously they will not have to bear the detention costs nor start litigation. And for goods that are truly counterfeit, this may be an opportunity to reach a very quick resolution that doesn't require the costs associated with both litigation and storage of goods.
Thank you very much for these insights.
You're very welcome.
And thank you, Don.
Cynthia Rowden and Scott McKendrick are partners in the Toronto office of Breskin & Parr. For further information on Bill C-8 and the Combating Counterfeit Products Act, and for information on our other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. I'm Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.